Today I'm joined by Karan Talwa. We are doing a mailbag show with a lot of drafts coming up this weekend for people, I'm assuming. I have a lot, he has a lot. So we'll talk about our drafts, we'll talk about your drafts and answer your questions. Let's go balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You're the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. Don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy. That's all that I need.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. You can find me on Twitter at AdamKing91. Find us on Twitter at FBI Basketball or head to the website FBIBasketball.com. Pretty sure all our leagues are full now. Drafts are rolling along. World Cup's rolling along. So, I don't think there's any vacancies, but I could be wrong. So do hit up B-Dub if you would like to join a league. I know I've seen some emails flying around about people dropping out, things like that. So, do contact us if you want to join a league. Also, we are now part of the Old Man Squad Fantasy Network. You can follow them at Old Man Squad as well. Plenty of great hosts. Dan Bespris, obviously, heading that up. Joining me, as I said today, Karan Talwa. I think first time on the show, actually, somehow.
Yeah, it is, man. How are you? Thanks for having me.
No. It's thanks for getting me in late on a Friday night. Over where you are, because you're in London now. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, moved over earlier this year, so it's still all right for me, like 9:30 right after dinner, but it's early morning for you as well.
It is 7:30, which actually is pretty dignified. I'm often doing shows at 6 a.m. and stuff like that. So I just thought we'd do some mailbag questions today. We were talking off air. We've both got a number of drafts coming up this weekend, as I'm sure a lot of people do. So how many have you got sort of scheduled for this weekend?
I have two auctions left. One's industry pickup tomorrow and then another one on Sunday.
Yeah, industry pickup. I think the other drafts are going or have maybe finished. I'm not sure whether they're done yet. But we're both in the auction industry pickup with I can say who's in that, because we do want to be promoting industry pickup this season. And let me have a look at who is in the league. So we've got myself, Joel Bartolotta, Angle Fantasy Basketball, Michael Waterloo, Alex Burns, Josh Lloyd, Point Made Basketball, Alex Reclean, B-Dub, Mitch Casey, Kyle McEwen, and Will C. I don't know who Will C is, actually. Yeah, I'm not sure. Anyway, should be good. It'll be interesting doing an auction with industry guys, because we all sort of have a bit of an idea of who, well, player values and that sort of thing. It's not like anyone in the draft is going to pay too much or not pay enough. Everyone's on the same page. So it'll be pretty competitive, and it's at 6 a.m. for me. So I'm gonna have to wake up and just get a coffee into me or something so that I'm on the ball. Whereas for you, it's 8 p.m. So the end of your Saturday. All right. Questions. Yeah. Injuries. Let's do injuries first. So I said we'd just chat about a couple of injuries, so we'll get those out of the way. So we've had a few injuries. I guess nothing too major. Probably the most significant was Isaiah Hartenstein's hand injury, which is going to cost him 5 to 6 weeks. So I guess we're looking at probably, what are we, a week out when it happened? So I don't know, potentially 20 games, 18 to 20 games. He was someone that I've been vocally sort of high on coming into the season. I've taken him in the 50s. I've taken him in the 60s. What does this do for his draft value, I suppose, in your eyes?
Yeah, for me, I tweeted this out as well. I think I'm going to treat him like Porzingis. So if I can get him outside the top 100, that's where I'm looking at it. I know they said that it's 6 weeks, so potentially at the end of November, he could be back early December, could even be a little longer than that, could be maybe sooner than that as well. But for me, in terms of what it will do in snake drafts now is for big men now, you need to get them early, because there's Porzingis is out of the question until after pick 100, and Hartenstein's quite late now as well. Okongwu's just coming back now. So he's back in that mix. Mark Williams is still hurt as well. We haven't seen him in preseason. So it does make me feel like if I'm in a snake draft, either I get those big men early or I pivot to a different strategy.
Yeah, it's one of the downsides of being in so many leagues, and I've already drafted quite a few, and obviously I landed Hartenstein in quite a few. So I've already had to go and hit up waivers and move him to my IR spot. And I think I tweeted something about the fact that I punt a lot, and I punt three or four categories, no worries at all. And one of the benefits, there are pros and cons, but one of the benefits is the fact that losing Hartenstein actually doesn't impact my projected results or anything like that. I'm strong enough in my five categories that losing him should be fine. I should be able to just move him to my IR spot and continue on my merry way. I'm trying to think who I picked up. I think I grabbed in one league, it was a deep league. So it's a 16 team league. I had to just get a center because I punted so hard that Hartenstein was my only center. So I needed a center, and best player available was Luke Kornet. So there you go. There's a deep center.
Backup center for potentially three quality games next week as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's looked pretty good. Horford's obviously getting older. No, he's not going to play back-to-backs. They would try. If it's a blowout either way, they'd probably, Horford would be one of the first guys they'd get off the floor. So I'm not going to get a lot from Kornet, but I figured in my build, he might give me a three-pointer. He's not terrible from the free throw line. So he won't drag down those categories that I need to be strong in. And then I think in another league, I picked up Nick Richards because, as you said, we haven't heard anything regarding Mark Williams. I don't even think we know. Is he going to be healthy opening night? Have they said either way? I don't think they have.
Now, the last update from Rod Boone, who covers the team, was that he's out of a walking boot and he's going to get reevaluated right before the season starts. That rules him out for the preseason, of course. And I think their preseason's done now already. So let's see if he can make it for opening night.
Yeah, I'd be skeptical given it's the Hornets. But hopefully it's only a week or two. But yeah, I think Nick Richards, we saw last year, he had some value. He's pretty limited to what he brings. But if he's going to start, they don't really have anyone else. So I think he's worth a look. So the next guy, Jalen Williams, who rolled his ankle yesterday. Didn't look great, but didn't look terrible. Just a standard sort of ankle roll or ankle sprain. News, I think, has come out this morning. So again, I've just woken up, but it does look as though they're not too concerned. So it doesn't look like it's going to be months or anything like that. Anyone who's been around basketball knows that ankle sprains can vary in terms of return time. It can be a week, it can be a month. I'm thinking maybe he misses a week, so he maybe misses like three to five games. But I mean, is there anything I've missed from overnight or during the day your time?
Yeah, that's the same news I saw. I think Tim McMahon posted that out, that he seems to have avoided a serious injury. That doesn't mean, like you said, he might miss a week still because it's not a serious injury. But I feel like for me in drafts, I would still be looking at him close to where I was previously, you know, in the late 30s, if I can get him there. And it wouldn't change so much for me on that for him at the moment. To put him down so much in the draft boards. But you got to know your league as well. If you're playing, like, for example, you're in a home league where people are a little bit more risk-averse, then you could potentially let him slide a little bit because you know he's probably going to come back to you. So you just got to know that. But for me, it's about the same.
And I suppose both these guys are obviously on the same team now, playing for the Thunder. The Jalen Williams one, probably not as much, but the Hartenstein one, does that sort of give anyone a bump for you? Are we sort of moving Chet up draft boards? Are we looking at Josh Giddey a little bit higher? Are we looking at Caruso a bit higher? Anything like that?
Yeah, Caruso for sure. I think I think he might start. I know nothing's confirmed yet, but I feel if they want to put Jalen at the four, assuming he's fit, and Chet back at the five, then Caruso slides in. For me, that sort of solidifies him at least more than just the really good steals and the really good sort of low turnovers kind of player that he is. So him, Chet, yeah, you could say that he does get a minor bump, especially for his rebounds and block numbers if he's playing at the five versus at the four. Having said that, we haven't really seen him ever play at the four. Like, he could be like a Jaren Jackson type as well, who actually has better blocks and better numbers at the four than he did at the five. But yeah, Chet gets a minor bump for me. I'm still only looking at him not before the end of the second round. I'm still in the 18 to 24 range. I'm still not comfortable drafting him at the turn of the first round.
Yeah, I think, yeah, a few people sort of came out and when we got that news about Hartenstein said, oh, we need to be moving Chet up and taking him higher. For me, it doesn't really move him at all. It just makes me feel a little bit safer about drafting him. I'm not shifting him. As you said, I'm still not comfortable taking him at 12, 13, 14. I'd probably go, middle of the second round, but that's where he was going anyway.
Anyways.
So I just think it sort of shores up his value a little bit for at least the first month to 6 weeks, but no significant changes. And then the last guy, no surprise, Kawhi Leonard, not going to be ready to start the season. We have no idea if this is, they've sort of said indefinite, but I mean, that can mean a week, it can mean a month. We don't know. He's not someone I was drafting anyway. But I mean, were you considering him in a certain range and now maybe considering him later, or are you just avoiding him altogether?
Unfortunately, I've already made the grave judgment, the grave error of having him in two different leagues. So one of them was the LOFP Roto, in which I went on Josh's show and he challenged me on it as well when I picked him, I think in 30 or something around that.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously now that does not look like a good decision. It was obviously games cap, so I felt like, I could take some of that hit of his missed games. And the second one was auction. I know we're going to talk about auctions a little bit as well. I think I fell into a trap there of price enforcement. And he was going for like $19 or something like that on a regular $200 budget. And I fell into the trap of, listen, I can't let him go for 19. And then I immediately after that regretted getting him at 19. Yeah. So, I mean, if you've already drafted and you have him, but there's nothing you can do. There's zero trade value for him. If you're in a league, there's no one's going to give you anything worth anything. So you just wait. If you're able to grab Norman Powell in the draft, like if you're able to get him or a scoring boost off the bench, then just put him on IL and see what happens. If you're drafting now in the next few days, in head-to-head, I'm not looking at him at least till the 70s, minimum 70s. And that also really depends in my first half of my picks. In my mind, have I got those sort of safer players or players I feel a little bit more comfortable with? Then I'd be more willing to do it in the 70s. Otherwise, even happier to let him slide further than that into the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we know the upside is there per game, but it's just so much uncertainty. So, if he was sitting there in the 80s, but he won't be. Someone will take him in the 40s or 50s still.
The name value is there still.
Yeah, it is. And look, to be clear, something I did notice, I think I jumped into Yahoo for a draft or something. Anyway, after the Isaiah Hartenstein news, he was the most dropped player in fantasy. And please do not drop Isaiah Hartenstein. He's only going to miss a month. It's a hand injury, so the ramp up will be very quick because he can basically be doing everything training wise with the team, other than sort of full on contact, because he doesn't want to risk re-injuring that hand. But he can be out there. He can be keeping his cardio up. So once he is good to go, it would only take a game or two and he should be at his usual workload. It's not a lower limb injury or anything like that. So do not drop Isaiah Hartenstein, please. Unless for some reason you don't have an IL spot. But surely in today's world, you have at least one, if not two. There's a question. I mean, it's not in these questions. We will get to the questions. But how many IL spots would you recommend having in a league nowadays?
Minimum two. I think some leagues have three as well. I'm all right with it. I feel like having them in place just gives an element of fairness there in terms of for injuries. It just makes it easier across the board for everyone not to worry about this guy's not going to come back for 6 weeks. Do I have to make that really difficult decision of dropping him? Minimum two, if not three, is fine as well. And definitely not the IL on Yahoo, which is obviously at the mercy of how they designate the players. Yeah. Versus IL plus, right? So that's if you're playing on Yahoo, make sure that your commissioner sets it that way.
Yeah, definitely IL plus. I think most of my leagues have two, maybe one has three, but yeah, I'd go with two, definitely IL plus. If you're in Fantrax, it doesn't matter. It's just a IR spot. You can plug anyone into there. A lot more flexibility over on Fantrax for managing those injured players. All right, into the questions or onto the questions. I have put up their Twitter handles here and I'll tag them when I get the show out. So at Rooch BTC, draft Jalen Johnson or Jalen Williams? So we were talking about Jalen Williams not really being impacted in terms of his value and draft spot due to this injury. So, yeah, is this a clear-cut choice for you or is it a 50-50 decision?
For me, it's literally like you can't go wrong with either pick. Just depends on what kind of fit build you're trying to make, right? I know it's not maybe the answer the person is looking for, but it's if you're looking for more of a balanced build, then maybe Jalen Williams comes in there. You know, he's good sort of across the board in certain areas. If you're looking for someone, you know, gives a little bit more rebounds, potentially more defensive stats capability, then you look at Jalen Johnson, right? With the injury, I would be comfortable if saying that, listen, if you're a little bit hesitant that he may miss a few weeks, may miss some time, then take Jalen Johnson ahead with this current news, right? That's how I would look at it, but you can't really go wrong with either.
No, I think they're both really good. I think Jalen Williams' ADP is higher at the moment. I think they sort of started off similar, and I think Jalen Williams has dropped Jalen Johnson has dropped slightly. Jalen Williams has come up slightly, but that, as you said, that might change with this injury. It might mean that people just pass on Jalen Williams. But yeah, I like both of them. I think if we're looking at it in a vacuum, I'd probably say Jalen Williams first, just because I think he does a little bit more across the board. But in saying that, I mean, Jalen Johnson, there's opportunity for him to get those assist numbers up this season. He's obviously a much better rebounder than Jalen Williams. He's probably got more opportunity just to get shots up as well, because the Thunder they've got Shea there, they've got Chet. So, yeah, I don't know. I like them both. So, again, it's probably not the answer that the person's wanting, but I think it's probably Williams. But, yeah, you really can't go wrong. So both are really good targets in that 30 to 40 range, I think. At E Squared Golf, favorite spot to draft from in a 12-team 9-cat Yahoo league. So where do you prefer in a just a standard snake draft? Are you at the top, in the middle, or down towards the turn?
Yeah, given the way this year's board is shaken out, right, for me, it's clearly either 2 or 6. Now, the reason it's 2 is because then someone's made the decision for me for Jokic or Wemby, and then I just sort of live with it, right? Whichever one I get, and it's easier for me. And 6, because then I'm guaranteed either one of the big four, which if they don't come, that's fine, with Shea and Luka and Wemby and Jokic, or I get one off Davis or Giannis. I'm guaranteed one of them, right? And then I can build my team in a myriad of ways with one of those guys at 6. Like the team I think I saw you build with Anthony Davis in one of the mocks you did recently, like that's a picture perfect sort of 5-category team that you built out, right? So you have those capabilities with Giannis or with Davis as well. So yeah, 6 would be my favorite. If not, I can get 2 then.
Yeah, I like, yeah, obviously having that 1 or 2 is great. Because I just think having Wemby is fun. So if you can get the 1 spot and you take Wemby, or you get the 2 spot and he happens to fall to you, I have Wemby in 1 spot and I'm, I'm happy with that. I drafted, I built around him and I think it'll be fun. But yeah, I like the 5-6 spot, mainly because I think Anthony Davis, he's growing on me as a fantasy target. I know the injury concerns are there, but for me, it's I know he's sort of missed a lot of games during his career, but it's never been for the same injury. It's not a recurring knee injury or a recurring ankle injury. It's always something weird.
It's like freak accidents many times.
Yeah, like diving for the ball. And I think just over the last couple of years, I think he's learned to manage himself a little bit better in terms of not doing stupid things on the court. And I think LeBron has probably impacted him in that area, because LeBron obviously looks after his body better than anybody. And so he's probably got in Anthony Davis's ear and sort of given him some tips and ideas on how to manage your body, how to work through injuries and avoid injuries. And I just think Anthony Davis, I think this is his team. Well, no, it's still LeBron's team, but I do think they're going to defer to Anthony Davis a little bit more. And so if I can land him at 5 or 6, I think he could be a top three player. And then if not, I like picking on the turn, just because it does make punting quite easy. If you can draft two players consecutively,
yep.
It means you can really build a strong team. So I don't mind picking it at the turn, because you do get the choice of two of your guys rather than just one and then waiting to see who comes back to you.
I think concurrently, like I want to get your thoughts on this. Like, what's the number which you're like in the first round which you don't want to draw from? Like, for me personally, it's 8, because there's so many ways, so many different directions you can go at 8, right? After assuming Halliburton goes 7, right? 8, do you want to take LaMelo? You can. Do you want to take Harden? You can. Do you want to take Trae Young? You can. Do you want to take Tatum? You can, right? It's not clear cut. So for me, 8 is probably the most trickiest one. I'm curious to see, like, do you think any of those is more tricky for you?
Yeah, probably similar range. I think once you get past even 6, like I don't want to take Giannis. I'm just not a Giannis guy in fantasy. So I think even once you get past 6, so into 7, but yeah, definitely that 8-9 sort of 10 range, because you're having to be, as we've sort of alluded to, you're having to be the decision maker and decide who you want to go to, and whereas the person sitting at 11 or 12 will just take whoever's left. And there's a number of guys there. I really don't want to be taking Embiid. So he's going in that 10 range. And if you're sitting at 10 and Embiid's there, he'll be at the top of your board because of his upside and projections and that sort of thing. But I don't want to be taking him. So, yeah, I think I'm sort of the same. I don't like picking in that 8, 9, 10 range. I'd rather have someone else make the decision for me, and then it comes back to me at 11, and then you get 11 and 14 or no, 11 and yeah, 14. Yeah, so. I think, no, maybe that's wrong. I don't know. It's early. All right, next question. yes, okay. So I put the top bit because this person, at Lyle Behrens 10, love the page. You and Adam Stock are the best. I'm assuming that's because we both punt, so I like people that like punting. Quick question, 10-man head-to-head league, punting blocks, who would you rather own with the last two spots? Jeremy Sochan, Dyson Daniels, or Josh Hart? Well, I mean, my answer to this is pretty obvious. If anyone listens to me, they're going to know that Dyson Daniels is one of my two. Is this an easy decision for you? Or, I mean, punting blocks, have you got any other guys that you'd be targeting in the last round, the last two rounds?
Yeah, I think out of this, the only guy who's probably has a shot at maybe a block a game or maybe a little bit close to a block a game is Sochan. I think the other two are not really shot blockers. So if you want to look at it, if the person wants to look at it that way, then potentially Daniels or Hart. In a punt block situation, if I'm not punting rebounds, then I would want to make sure I get those rebounds. Because if you're punting blocks, you sort of gravitate away from those big men who give rebounds as well. So a Josh Hart in this scenario would make a lot of sense as well, because he's not going to give you any blocks, but he gives you those 7-8 rebounds, which is very difficult to find. So that's what I would just keep in mind if I'm punting the blocks. I would keep in mind that, can I get my rebounds in FG? Like, where do I get my rebounds in FG from? And that's how I would sort of look at my last few picks as well.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for all three of these guys. As you said, Josh Hart will definitely get you those rebounds. Daniels, I think he will get you some rebounds out of position as well. Not as many as Hart, but he might get you five, he might get you six. But he's obviously has the upside to be elite in the steals category. Both could get assists. Both could hit threes. So it's really, yeah, do you need more rebounds or do you need more steals at that point? And then Sohan, I just think he's playing in his more traditional position at the power forward. He's a good rebounder as well, despite the fact that Wemby is on the court and Wemby's going to get his. Sohan could also get you seven rebounds a night. So, but he obviously then doesn't have that upside in one category. He's sort of a across the board kind of thing. He'll get you a couple of assists, maybe a steal, maybe a block, but we're not worried about the blocks. So, yeah, I think you could make a case for any of them. For me, it would be Daniels just because I'm really high on Daniels and probably Sohan. I don't know. Sohan's growing on me, as I said, but you can't really go wrong with any of those three, I don't think. Okay, now this was the two-part one. Yeah, so this is an interesting one. Actually, let's do this one first because this one will be a quicker one, I think, and then we'll come back to those other ones. So last season before Rozier was traded, he was a great mid-round guy and has been for a couple of years in a points league. And I did have to edit this to get it on the screen because you can only do so many characters. But basically this person, so what is it, MoanaFan707, was mentioning the fact that when LaMelo was out, Rozier got a bump. He was a much better fantasy asset. Thinking ahead to this season, if LaMelo gets injured, and let's be realistic, there's a chance that he does get injured again, who benefits? Because we saw down the stretch last year, it was Trey Mann and Vasily Micic, who both had pockets of value. If based on what we've seen in the preseason, LaMelo has been healthy, but is there a clear-cut second option if LaMelo does go down with an injury?
I think it's similar, the roster construction from last year. I think Trey Mann's been playing really well, so he would be my preference if any of the guards sort of go down in that starting five. But Micic, I think he would start if LaMelo goes down. So if the person wants to look at him as a handcuff for LaMelo, they could. So I'm okay with either of them. I think they have Brandon Miller listed as a two guard as well and on many sites as an SG. So his value potentially goes up if you want to see in the starting lineup if LaMelo goes down. So the answers remain sort of same from last year for me.
Yeah, I think for me it's Mann pretty clearly. Yeah, you're right. He may not start. They might start Micic just because he's more of a traditional point guard. But from what I've seen in the preseason, I think Brandon Miller's going to be handling the ball a bit. LaMelo's been deferring to him. I think they're probably trying to get LaMelo off ball a little bit more because he's obviously an elite three-point shooter. And Brandon Miller's looked really good. His three-point shot as well. So I don't think it's going to be like last year where if we don't have LaMelo, we need a ball handler on the floor because I think they can defer to some other guys that are there. So, yeah, for me, it's Trey Mann. I've just pulled up his preseason. He played four of their five games, averaging 20-ish minutes, about 20, and he scored double digits in all four games, 16 points, 19 points, 14 points, 15 points, 5-2, 4-2 assists. Doesn't get you much on the defensive end, but, yeah, I think good from the free throw line, and I think he's just going to give them that offensive boost that they need off the bench. So I think it would be Trey Mann for me as well. All right, let's go to this one here. Now, this is a two-part question it's one question, but there's two screenshots. So BurkTopal928, I guess I've said that right. I've been playing fantasy for a long time now, consider myself an okay player, but I want to challenge myself to become an advanced player and try some experimental strategies. I was wondering if there is something you'd recommend to take my fantasy knowledge to the next step. So basically, what are some new things to try? So we've been doing fantasy for a long time. And I know you said to me auction is something that you, last year was your first sort of foray into auction drafts. So that's the obvious answer here is if you've never done an auction draft, go and do an auction draft. But I mean, anything else sort of come to mind for you that, that he could try to further or make that fantasy experience a bit different or more challenging?
Yeah, I think auction is definitely one which for me was, even if you feel like you know how to play fantasy, when you get into an auction room, everything is like all bets are off, right? Anything can happen, and you really need to have a plan as to what you want to do there. I think if you want to still play within the regular snake drafts, etc., then you could try out some new categories. You could potentially look at sort of giving percentages in a separate way, like 2-point percentage and 3-point percentage. You could look at assist to turnover ratio. You could look at all these kind of actual stats, because obviously a lot of the stats that we, actually many of the stats we play with right now, like 3-point made and all these ones have been there for years. So if you want to try something new, you can try out a new stat system. But the challenge with that would be that you may not find enough people who want to do that with you, because everyone's sort of a creature of habit and we all want to do the same sort of categories. But that's one which I feel if you can get a group of people together to try out something, that's worth having a shot.
Yeah, I do think, auctions, I think, I don't know if last year wasn't my first time in doing one, but I think, as I said to you, I've got three auction drafts, so I'm going to be drafted out. But, yeah, certainly that's the obvious one, go and do an auction draft. The issue, you're not going to find a lot of public auction drafts with just random people. It needs to be something that's organized between friends or at least people that you know. Because it is a time-wise, it's a 2 to 3 hour exercise, as we've seen from the industry, the mock auctions and things that I've done with Discord people. It does take some time. So that's the obvious one. I mean, if you're looking at, you add categories, take categories away. There are obviously, everyone has their own opinion on which categories are the best and should we have turnovers? Shouldn't we? Do we split rebounds? Do we remove percentages? You can always try things like that. I'm certainly one for trying new things when it comes to fantasy, and every season I try some new formats. And this year we did one where because obviously one of the negatives that a lot of people talk about when it comes to head-to-head leagues is that it's so reliant on like 1 week, and if your main guy's out for four games and they happen to fall in 1 week, you're stuffed. And whereas Roto, you can handle that because it's over the full season. So I've sort of tried to, and I'm sure this has been done before, but sort of tried to combine that by doing a head-to-head league this year where you play every team every week. So it's, you're not playing team A in the first week, team B in the second week. You're playing, it's only a 10-team league, so 9 matchups a week. So there's no advantage in terms of, hey, if this person was missing Jason Tatum and, I don't know, and Derek White, they're both out in the same week, and so whoever played against him is probably going to win. Everyone's playing against him, so everyone benefits. So I'm trying to eliminate some of that, and we'll see how that format works. And then in two of my leagues, I think, which I did this last year, and that seemed to work really well, and that's splitting the league into two halfway through the season. So another, I guess, downfall of head-to-head leagues is that, well, and Roto, I guess this happens as well, but people lose interest. If you lose your best player in the first week of the season, then, by sort of the, 12th or 13th week, you're probably just done. You're probably sitting at the bottom of the standings and really no chance of getting into the playoffs. And so you lose interest, you don't set your lineup, and then it's, well, whoever's playing this team for the next 10 weeks is going to win 8-1 or something like that. Because so that's an issue, and it's fair enough. Look, if your team sucks and you're not competitive, you're not going to be as invested. So something I've done with my two home leagues now is split it. So it's around, basically you play every team once. So if it's a 14 team league, which one of mine is, you play 13 rounds. So every team once. The league then splits top eight or top seven, bottom seven. You redraft. So there's, you're basically only drafting what, 100 players. So your team becomes much stronger, and that negates it, in my mind anyway, it negates some of that risk with injuries and rest down the stretch, because in theory you've got two first round players on your team because you're only drafting like seven players per round. So it seemed to work really well. The top eight then go off and you play your own league, bottom eight go off and play their own league, and the top eight play for the title, bottom eight play for the number one pick next year. So it sort of just means if you're sitting 12th in the standings and you've got no chance of winning, you basically hit reset, redraft, and then you get a shot at the number one pick for next season. So that's something that I've tried, and it seems to work really well. And I just love drafting. So any excuse to do a draft, it does mean you've got to squeeze a draft into the middle of the season, which obviously you don't get a – you basically got to end your league on a Sunday, draft on the Sunday night, ready for the Monday. But you can time it so that if you do it during the All-Star break, you can end your sort of regular season, I suppose, at the All-Star break, and you then get a week to draft before games start again. So, yeah, I don't know. That's something that I've done, and it's been enjoyable. But, yeah, anyway.
No, go. I like that, because it's like the bottom half of the teams, they have something to play for. And because that happens in many leagues, right? The 8th or 9th or the 10th person, they're like, we're not going to make the playoffs. We're so far off. May as well just, you know, drop players or like mess around a little bit. So, yeah, I do like that. And that's if everyone can get set up with it and everyone's sort of timings align, it's good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it is like, yeah, a little bit tricky in the middle there, but I enjoy it. So we've talked about auction leagues, and this is the last question, and then I'll let you go and get ready and wrap up your day. At Ralph Sunger, tips about auction leagues. Yeah, look, I mean, we've done a few now, so it's a lot of fun, and I think certainly levels the playing field. What tips would you have, having done a couple of auction drafts now?
Yeah, I think, see, if you're, like you said, it's very difficult to find a mock for auctions. You know, sometimes it's very difficult to find a league, let alone a mock, right? So if it's your first time doing a mock, I would go in and I would watch the videos that, you know, you've put out and, you know, other analysts have put out on auction drafts, because you want to get a sense of what happens in the room, right? You want to get a sense of like the dynamics of the room. Like, this is what's happening. This kind of bids happen. You know, people do it in this increments. This is when you have to be on top the whole for the whole 2.5 hours. So you need to get some practice there. And that's probably the only way you can get practice. That's one, right? The second one for me is really like have a plan, right? Now, I know this is probably for life or probably for any type of league, you do have a plan of what you want to do, but especially for auction, because you may have a set of target players you want to go after, but then someone else also has a similar list of target players. Do you have a backup plan? Do you have a backup to a backup plan, right? That's the kind of stuff that you should sort of think about before the auction draft, so that when you walk in, you're not sort of taken, you know, aback when something that you thought would happen doesn't happen. So I would say those are the two big ones. Obviously, we could get a lot more into strategy in terms of price enforcement, bids, and all that kind of fun stuff. But I feel like the basics are more important if this is your first auction league.
Yeah, I think there are obviously a lot more strategies when it comes to auction. And I guess the two main ones are stars and scrubs or ballots. Yep. They're usually the way that most people will go. And yeah, I would certainly suggest going back and watching some of the auction mock draft shows that we've done. I think I did two or three live auctions, and just to get an idea of price, and it does vary again, because the price is often set by the first round, like whatever people are paying for those bigger names. It means there might be some money left later, or money goes off the board. It's very unique. Every draft is unique, so it is hard to get an accurate read on value. But yeah, I would pick a strategy sort of before you go in, but be like have some flexibility. So if you do need to change, because you might go in thinking, well, I don't want to spend more than $50 on a player. I want to go more of a balanced team. But then someone like, Anthony Davis might be sitting there for $50 and think, that's amazing value. I'm just going to take him. And obviously that then changes your strategy a bit. But for me, I go in usually – why I like auctions is because it makes punting a bit easier, because I can actually have a list of players that I want to target. It doesn't matter what their ADP is or anything like that. I can just say, these are the guys, and I've done enough mock drafts so that I know, okay, I want to punt points, three-pointers and assists. Who am I targeting? Who are the guys that I want to get? And you can plug it into sort of like projections and things like that, or even just rank them in order. And you can really go in with a set strategy, which I like. Something this is probably more of an issue for us, because we talk about players that we like when we're on shows and things like that. But I know that when I do auction drafts, people that I'm drafting with know who I want. And so they will price enforce. They will, like last year, I remember I really wanted Devin Vassell. And I thought, based on what I've seen him going for, I'll get him for like $10, $11. And I ended up having to pay $20 because people knew that I wanted him and they knew that they could just keep bidding and I would go after him. So, yeah, try to keep your strategy close to your chest and your preferred players close to your chest if you can, just so that it's not like a snake draft where you get sniped by people sort of either side of you. They can actually team up on you. Like they could, in theory, get together and say, well, hey, we know if you've won the league the last year, they might get together and go, hey, we know that he really wants these guys this year, so let's all chip in together and take turns trying to bid him up and try and get his money off the board. So that's probably doesn't happen a lot, but I think it's possible.
It's in the realm of possibility. Like, I'm going to make you bid $20 for Dyson Daniels tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I fear with my leagues, because obviously everything is out there for me. So yeah, I've got a list of guys for my auction drafts tomorrow, but I have no idea what I'm going to have to pay for them. So it does make it tricky, but it's still fun.
It is fun. And then there's also the element of surprise, right? Like if for example, you're playing in a league in which people know the kind of players you like, right? You could even go like completely opposite that year, as long as you know what you're doing, right? Supposing you're a guy who likes really flashy scorers and you've always had those in your team for the last years the leagues have been running. This year, go and surprise everyone and go for a punt points build. They're not going to see you come in and bidding $8 for Draymond Green because they're like, oh, that's not a current type player. But then you kind of like, you get the value then, right? So it just, that's the beauty of an auction, that you can, like you said, you can go in so many directions. You can have so many elements of surprise there, which is why it's probably the most fun way of drafting.
Yeah, it is. And look, again, look for value. If there's a guy sitting there who you think is really good value but doesn't fit your bill, don't be afraid to take him and then trade him. Like you might sort of take, Walker Kessler and you go, oh, I'm punting blocks, but I think Walker Kessler could open the year and be like a double-double with 2.5 blocks and a top 50 player for the first 2 months. If you can get him for $9 for whatever reason he's sitting there, grab him and then in a week just trade him for someone who fits your build. So don't be afraid to sort of shop around and that sort of thing. So hopefully they help. I'm not sure, but certainly go and do an auction draft if you haven't done one. And if you are in an auction draft, good luck and enjoy. I am going to let you go. What's on the agenda for you, I guess, this season?
Yeah, so you can get me on Twitter at Karan_Talwar27. I have my free newsletter, Swishcribe. That's the link is in my Twitter bio as well. So I've been putting out content on punt guides, been putting out content on sort of last round players and other things as well. So that's where you can find me. Excited to, you know, get ready for the season. Finally, the NBA is coming back. Thanks for having me, man.
No, that's all right. It's been fun. I have no idea what shows I've got in the next couple of days, but my daily show will start next week. Between Two Dans will be sort of kicking off again next week. The crossover with Matty G has been going for a couple of weeks now. So plenty coming up. But yes, we are very close to NBA action now. It's only, what are we, 5 days? Something like that. It's pretty close. So getting excited. The preseason probably ends actually in the next day or two.
Today's the last day, yeah.
Today's the last day. Okay, so a few more. For any NBL fans as well, Montrezl Harrell is staying in Australia. So if you've been watching the NBL, Montrezl Harrell was only meant to be here for a set amount of time, but he's opted to stay. I would assume unless he gets a call from an NBA team, which I don't know if that'll happen. But yeah, that's for all the Aussie fans watching the NBL. It is good to see Montrezl Harrell sticking around. We will put a pin in it there. That will do for today's show. I'm Adam King. Here's Karan Talwar. This has been the Balls Deep podcast. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.